Steve Dale's Petcast. Pets are always there for you. They're a dependable source of unconditional love and support. For a short time, they're your best friend. But for them, you're their best friend for their entire lives. This is Steve Dale's Petcast, brought to you by Farm to Pet, single ingredient pet treats. Visit farmtopettreats.com.
She is one of our own, and I'm so excited to have her on this Petcast. She practices in Skokie, but she's an important person, really important. She is the chief veterinary officer at the North American Veterinary Community, which, among other things, runs veterinary conferences, and one of those is, I think, Dr. Dana Varbal, the largest veterinary conference, at least on this side of the planet, called VMX. It's a big one anyway. It sure is.
It is, yeah. This January, between the 25th and the 29th, VMX will welcome nearly 30,000 veterinary professionals all to one location to talk about the newest and greatest medical advances that are coming out in 2025 that are going to help both pets and pet parents live better, happier, longer lives.
So for a variety of reasons, including the fact that this conference happens just toward the beginning of the year, lots of new innovations are announced at this event. New products are announced at this event as well. And there is so much new, I think, that matters to you as a pet parent that is happening at VMX that your veterinarian is going to miss, actually, if your veterinarian doesn't go to VMX, or maybe your veterinarian will catch up in one of the publications that's out there or at another conference. But this is where all the cutting edge stuff occurs first, I think, Dr. Varbal.
Yeah, I mean, because we're happening in January, Steve, I agree. Like, this is the opportunity. All of these great products, new ideas, new innovations, new procedures get launched. We really have the world's largest gathering of experts, and they love to share what they've been working on, new research, new ideas they have. So we love that VMX is kind of the launching pad and sets the tone for what's going to come out for your pets in 2025, right at the beginning of the year, right in January.
All right. So,
and there's so much exciting stuff. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some of that exciting stuff. So to me, there are basically two buckets, and they kind of intersect in some ways. One, we'll talk about first, individualized medicine. And then the other is AI, artificial intelligence, happening, blossoming, I would argue, in veterinary medicine. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about individualized medicine first and what that means and what some of the innovations are.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a cool concept. And what I love about individualized medicine, Steve, is that we're seeing this concept really bloom both in human healthcare and in veterinary healthcare kind of simultaneously. The idea that each of us as individuals, you know, are unique, and that how we're going to respond to medications or how we're going to respond to treatments is as unique as each one of us is, which is very cool. So there's certainly a lot of things, a lot of new technologies that are being developed to study basically the individual. You know, when we've done big studies in the past, and I know, Steve, you're a big fan of science and research and having the best evidence for our medicine. Usually we look at these huge populations to try and get trends. Well, most animals will respond to this, and most pets will do well with this medication. This starts to dig down into that. It really starts to go, well, why is it that Luffy does really well on this medication, but our friend Spot doesn't? And why, you know, what is happening? Why aren't they following the rules?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination of things. It's really looking at every animal's unique history. And again, but also these really cool new, again, trends in science. And a lot of it has to do with the widespread availability of DNA testing. So two things there. DNA of the patient, what makes your pet tick? what is different about your pet? What genetic factors, what unusual genetic mutations, what are we learning about those genetic mutations? How do they affect the body? It's so easy to get a full genetic profile of an individual these days. For those of you that, you know, remember back in the day when we were going to finally sequence one whole human being, and it was going to be this huge project, and it took a decade of work to do. Now it takes, I don't know, a couple days in the lab at the most.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the speed at which we can find out what unique genetics your pet may have and how that may contribute to how they respond to disease is quite remarkable. And we're learning more every day about what those genetics mean. And are they significant? And do they change their health? Or are they just a little DNA blip that really doesn't do anything? Because so many genetic mutations don't do anything. So really interesting stuff there. Lots of research being put into it. But it really, again, drills down to that. What is happening on the individual level?
You know, soon.
And then the other really cool
thing. Go ahead.
Thing,
yes.
Go ahead,
yeah.
Steve.
No. Go. You're on a roll. Go for it.
Well, I am, because find it so exciting, because not only are we looking at the individual, but now we're starting to look at things like the DNA of bacteria that may be infecting them, the DNA of the bacteria that are normal and healthy in their stomach and intestines and how that may be affecting them, the DNA of viruses that might be in their nose. And that DNA is helping us as veterinarians, and again, you as pet owners, decide what medications would be the best way to get rid of those bacteria and viruses, the best way to promote those normal, healthy bacteria that are always present in our stomach and intestine. So again, not only individuals, but the DNA of the little tiny bacteria inside of each of us are getting studied.
Which is absolutely incredible. I mean, do you see a day when the puppy or kitten comes into the veterinarian for the first visit and a blood test, simple blood test, is taken? Or even a dog or a cat, mixed breed, you know, domestic short hair or mixed breed dog,
mm-hmm.
comes in at the age of 4 to 6 or whatever, doesn't matter, simple blood test. And the veterinarian will be able to look at the results and say, the potential for this kind of cancer is great. The potential for this kind of cancer, not likely to happen. The potential for this disease, likely to happen. For this disease, not so much. Do you think that can be around the corner?
Steve, what if I told you it was already here?
What?
What if I told you it was already here? Not for everything yet, but the potential is huge. If you're looking, and what if I told you it was even easier than a blood test? What if I told you it was a cheek swab? What if
wow.
I told you it was a, yeah, it's amazing. So there are certain diseases, there are certain types of cancer, there are certain things like joint diseases, bone deformities, even use certain types of seizures or endocrine diseases that we're already starting to see genetic markers that make them more likely or less likely. And again, when I tell you these results take a couple of weeks, we're looking at a time frame where in the very near future, you could submit a DNA test at home when you get a new puppy or a new kitten at 8-10 weeks of age. And when you go for your follow-up at the vet at 12 weeks of age for another set of vaccines to talk about health, you could do a full review of your pet's DNA panel with your veterinarian to talk about the likelihood of certain diseases developing in their life. And
yes,
potentially the things we could do to prevent them or slow that progression.
Well, right. So not only are we going to be able to, and are now, able to increasingly identify, but also to do something about it. So, for example, the number one cause of death in cats between the age of about 2 to 3 to 9 or 10 or 11, when cancers and kidney disease begin to take over, is called feline hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is a all too common heart disease in cats. And there is a medication called rapamycin that in 2025, if the FDA, Center for Veterinary Medicine, does what we hope they will do, not, you know, no promises there, but it seems as though this is going to happen. And as long as you catch this disease before actual heart failure, so fairly early on, then this treatment is, I hate to say it, because it's like so unbelievable to me, but maybe a cure. So the cat never goes into heart disease. The disease gets better, not worse, which progressively it otherwise would, because up till now there's been no effective treatment at all, just to make life more comfortable for these kitties. So this changes everything, and this is an example of, okay, not only can we better identify if this cat may be more likely to have this disease, but also now we've got, in this one example, hopefully, in 2025, a cure.
Yeah, I mean, and just think, if you have a pet that you're aware of, a potential genetic basis for disease, that you, say you have a cat that you know is at higher risk for kidney disease, Steve. The potential to do certain things from everything from nutrition to medications to the way you approach, you know, how much water they have access to. The idea that you could delay the onset of that kidney disease affecting them and changing how they feel every day, which is what we really want, right? If we know it's going to happen, sometimes genetics are genetics. But if I can take those simple things, a specific kind of food, increasing water, double-checking their kidney values maybe a little bit more frequently at your veterinary office, if I can delay the onset of them feeling bad from, let's say, 7 years of age to 10 years of age, that's tremendous. And that's not them being sick from it. That's not them, you know, not feeling well, having stomach upset, or even potentially dying of it. That's just them even being aware of it. We have the potential to be aware of some of these diseases and intervene before our pets even know that they have these. So the idea that we could do that is, to me, that's the amazing thing. I don't ever want them to feel bad. I want them to feel better every day and lead these amazing lives where they don't know that they're sick. They, again, live like kings and queens in our houses. And, you know, the idea that we're going to be able to delay that a few years is pretty remarkable.
Oh, yeah. I'd say that. I mean, you're not old enough, but 20 years ago? I mean, no one would have ever expected, or this, mm-hmm. what we call AI or artificial intelligence. How is that going to be used or being used increasingly in veterinary medicine?
Well, we're definitely seeing this is one of these technologies. It's everywhere, right? Every job has talking about how we can use AI, how we can use it responsibly, and how we can use it so that we can make the most of it. The big advantage with AI is that it can review and look at so much data so quickly and pick up trends. And the way it's being used in medicine, it's really about drawing our human attention to things that the patterns don't fit or they might be abnormal. And then we could take a look and confirm or deny. So it's already being used in several areas. Probably the biggest use we're seeing already is in diagnostic testing. We've been using AI to look at x-rays for Steve, I think we talked about this 3 or 4 years ago, at least, if not more.
Yeah.
So it's looking at x-rays. It's been looking at x-rays for quite some time. And the advantage is if I get a report that I know is generated from AI, it will have on it a list of things I need to look at. And, you know, sometimes that list of things is things my human eye skipped over or didn't catch and go, that's okay. We need to keep an eye on that. Or, oh, that was there last year and it hasn't changed. I can confirm that now because I've got the same report from year to year, and that's really helpful information for me as a doctor as well. But we're also seeing it grow into other areas, looking again at those fecal samples, detecting small pieces of genetic material in those fecal samples. You know, one of our biggest concerns has always been when we check for intestinal parasites, for worms, sometimes we're relying on eggs from those worms being present in the stool and being able to see them under the microscope. But what if with new technologies, we're not just looking for eggs under the microscope, we're looking just at little pieces of DNA that we know come from those worms. All of a sudden, I don't have to wait for it to be the right time of year or the right time of day or a stool sample to be super fresh or, you know, it starts to feel like our old ways felt like luck. And this feels like, oh, we can find these every time, or we have a much better chance of finding intestinal parasites early. And again, being able to provide the correct medication earlier. So that's another way AI is being used. I know this is a pet peeve for a lot of people. Those pesky ear infections, the ones that never seem to go away. You go back to the vet, you get medication, they get better. Then they can come back. We're looking at the cytology. So underneath the microscope, we look at what kind of bacteria are there, what kind of yeast are there. And then, to be honest, we look at estimates. There's a lot of bacteria, or there's just a few. And we think they're mostly these kind. But again, now with AI, they're looking at those samples and getting a much better idea, putting numbers to a lot versus a little, and helping us make better choices as far as medication that can help your pet. So that's one area I know a lot of pet parents get super frustrated with ear infections, and I don't blame you. They're awful. So any help we get there, I think, is going to benefit us all.
Yeah, those are the recurrent ear infections, and you do what the veterinarian says. You're compliant.
Mm-hmm.
And a week later, it's back. 2 weeks later, it's back. Whatever it is, they're back. And you've done everything, and the veterinarian has used all his or her tools. It's not that anyone has done anything wrong, per se. And now there's new medications coming out for these as well.
Yeah, we can really start to take a look at another fun thing that AI is helping us do is take a look, again, at the DNA sample from those ear infections, for example, and make better guesses, really. So we're looking at DNA sequencing of the bacteria of the yeast in the ear. And one of the things that DNA sequencing can do, and AI is helping us do it, is look for genes that might prevent medication from working. And the best one is we know certain bacteria have a gene that makes them resistant to things like amoxicillin, that everyone knows it's a great medication. But if I take a sample from your dog and I could send it off, instead of for just a culture and our best guesses, if I can send it off for DNA sampling and I can see that that bacteria has DNA that might make it resistant or make amoxicillin not work, I know right away I can pick a different medication. And it really has the advantage over culture, because culture takes a long time. If anyone's ever waited for a culture, especially for yeast, it can take a long time to figure it. 3 days, 7 days. Well, we don't want dogs and cats to have infections for 3 days or 7 days while we're waiting for results. We want to start medication. We want to get them feeling better. And the big advantage is new DNA testing. And again, AI is helping us interpret this, is how fast we can get results, sometimes the next day. And that's huge. The idea of being able to start the right medication that much faster, again, just means your pet's going to be more comfortable. The medications are going to work better. And I will also add, you know, we hear about it and we think about bacterial resistance and how it's affecting everyone's health. These new technologies really address that, to make sure that we're choosing antibiotics very wisely, so that if you were ever to have a life-threatening infection, or your dog or cat were to ever have a life-threatening infection, that I can save those very special antibiotics for those instances and not just use them if we got a bad toenail. for example, a little wound.
Historically, I mean, what you're trying to say, I think, and what you're saying, by the way, very, very well. An issue in human medicine, too, is that you get the sniffles and you call the doctor and say, give me an antibiotic, and you get better. Well, it could have been the antibiotic, but more likely you would have gotten better anyway. And if it's viral for our dogs, if it's viral for our cats or us, an antibiotic isn't going to help. But sometimes the dog looks at you cross-eyed and you call the veterinarian and say, I want an antibiotic. And now veterinarians are rightly beginning to say no. And it's not only the decision they are making on their own. It's a decision that's being led by the federal government, actually, for the reasons you explained about the increasing antimicrobial or antibiotic resistance. So you explained that incredibly well. It is always the great thing about these petcasts and also talking to Dr. Dana Varbal is we're able to go deep a little bit. So thank you for that. And thank you for everything you continue to contribute to veterinary medicine to help our pets.
Oh, thanks so much, Steve. You know, I'm really excited. I think you and I both get excited every year to hear about the new things and how our pets can live longer and better lives.
And that's beginning to happen for sure. Dr. Varbal, I have a better life because I get to talk to you every now and again. Thank you so much.
Shame. Thank you, Steve. Have a great day.
We're finished.
That's it.
That's it.
You've been listening to the Petcast Podcast, brought to you by Farm to Pet, single ingredient pet treats. Visit farmtopettreats.com.